We want a timer running here, that's for sure. You know, I'm a pretty cold-natured guy. Kind of skinny and, I don't know, low blood pressure or something. I don't know. But for whatever reason, I'm usually pretty cold, and I am not cold right now. It's warm up here. You guys think you're warm? Come on up here. I don't know. There's a heater running here or something. I was just telling Marcia, I was writing some fear inventory. I sat down to write, you know, some stuff concerning my daughter, and I might get into that later. I don't know. I probably won't have time, but I realized I got a lot more fears going than I thought I did. I've got a little work to do. I didn't finish it today, but I thought, you know, I got a little fear on my mind right now about this talk I'm going to give tonight, and so I started kind of looking at that and wrote some things down, and you know what I've figured out doing that inventory is what I've got a little fear about is that I've got different audiences here. You know, I've got family members here, and you're going to see this as I go on, but I'm a selfish guy. You know, it's pretty much all about me most of the time, and thank God for this work. It's not a good place to be, but I'm thinking, you know, I got the families here, and I want to be the guy. I want to, where when you're going home, you're thinking, I feel so reassured. You know, my kid or my husband or wife or boyfriend or girlfriend or my addict or alcoholic is in good hands there in Austin, Texas, thanks to guys like Chad Payne. But it's not just the family, because I got the residents here, right? And they get drilled with some hardcore big book stuff, and I'm a hardcore big book guy, right? So I got to be coming out of the book, and we got to have some solid hardcore big book thumper stuff if I'm going to impress the residents, right? Well, I got to balance it. But not only that, there's some kind of some community members from AA and CA that I know pretty well that are out here. Man, I got a reputation to uphold with these people, you know. I mean, I gotta be this AA guy. I gotta impress people, and you know, I've got this idea that goes way back that in order for me to be okay in here, I gotta arrange everything out here, right? Can anybody relate to that? A big part of arranging things out here is impressing people. I gotta impress people, and if I can keep people impressed, must mean I'm all right. Now, see, I don't see that until I start doing a little inventory, until I start saying some prayers, and I start seeing some of the truth about me. See, the truth is, I'm okay in here just because I'm an expression of my Creator, or a child of God. That's what makes me okay. As a matter of fact, that's the only thing that makes me okay. There is no way that I can impress enough people enough for me to be okay for very long. See, what happens is I can impress somebody, right? And I pull it off sometimes. But then I set the bar a little higher. Because then to keep impressing them, I got to do a little better and a little better. And eventually it's not going to work. And I'm going to kind of just, you know, crash. And there goes my whole world. And now I'm back to being that kid that just feels weak and scared and like he doesn't measure up, you know? But I don't get to see that truth, the truth that really, the truth is that I'm okay and that I'll never be able to impress enough people for me to be okay. The only shot I've got at being okay is to have some God consciousness, to see the truth that really I'm just okay because I'm a child of God. I don't get to see that truth without doing this work. Now, if I'm not doing this work, I'm living in this kind of this constant state of fear and tension and resentment and self-pity. That's the worst one. If I stay like that long enough, I got an answer for that. I got a quick answer. A couple drinks, a little methamphetamine. Yeah, that's a quick answer for that. I'll get that idea back in my head that maybe this time I can pull it off and I'll be okay. and I go back, you know. So anyway, my name's Chad Payne, and if you guys hadn't guessed it yet, I'm a drug addict. I've been sober since April 2nd, 2003, and before I forget, I got to tell you, some of you know this and some of you don't. It is a huge honor to get to stand up behind a microphone and carry the message in Mark Houston Hall. Wow. Mark Houston was... I just can't put into words how much of a hero he's been for me. You know, I still listen to him on CD, and when I'm listening to him, I'm like, oh my God, it just blows me away. I used to sit at the table with him on Thursday night at my sponsor's house, and I remember one time he was doing a little talk on the hour after the fifth step. You guys know when you go home and you review what you've done, you get quiet, you set the little timer for the hour, put the book on the shelf. For you big book thumpers, put the book on the shelf. You guys catch that? You got to take it down from the shelf. The only way you can get it down from the shelf is if you put it on the shelf. Well, he was doing a talk on that hour. And I'm like, close your mouth. You know, he's blowing me away. And I after that talk, I looked over at Charlie, my sponsor, and I said, I only understood about 10% of what he said. But that 10% has revolutionized that hour for me. And that's just the kind of guy he was. He had been doing this deal at such a high level for such a long time, and he had such a strong message to carry. And you know, he said just little things here and there that set me off on a path that changed my life. It's amazing. Okay, I got to get into the talk now. Let's see. I think it's important, not just for the families. I mean, definitely tonight for the families, but for. For the alcoholics and the drug addicts to understand what's wrong with us. Because I mean, and I'm sure most of you can relate to this, I mean, we spend a lot of time in our lives wondering, what the hell is wrong with me? Something's wrong, right? Something's wrong. I don't know what it is, but something is wrong. And I want to just run through a quick description and then show you kind of what that looks like in my life. When we talk about alcoholism, we look at some different aspects. And the Big Book does such a good job of describing what it means to be alcoholic. In my experience, real quick before I get started, I want to tell you guys, you know, I'm a drug addict. I mean, I drank, but I consider myself more of a drug addict. This Big Book, it applies to my life every bit as much as it does to an alcoholic. All I got to do is replace a couple words. And it works. And as a matter of fact, I've been in other fellowships. I spent time in Narcotics Anonymous and saved my life, but they don't use the Big Book. You know? And I'm a firm believer in what this book says. Like my sponsor says, I'm an unapologetic Big Book thumper. You know? Because it's out of gratitude, man, because this thing has changed my life. So anyway, what the book says, we got a problem. I have a drug problem. I mean, it's not my big problem, but I have a drug problem. And what a drug problem looks like is real simple. When I put drugs in my system, I don't have control over how much I do. That's simple, right? I mean to do a little bit, and I don't stop there. I do a lot. Okay, that's the easy part. And people all over AA and other fellowships, almost everybody gets that part. But here's the thing. If that's my only problem, there's a real simple solution to that. And that's, if I lose control when I take the first drink, don't take the first drink. And you'll hear it in AA meetings. You'll hear people say, don't drink no matter what. That's great advice. Unless you're an alcoholic. See, I drink no matter what. It doesn't really matter what's going on. I mean, mom's birthday, I mean, you know, whatever. I drink no matter what. I've got a mind that always gives me a good reason. Now, when I say good reason, let me tell you, it ain't a good reason to y'all. But it's a good reason to me to pick up another drink. And that just gets me started. Right? Because I don't have any control. So that's kind of the physical and mental aspects. And as my sponsor says, other than I can't use drugs successfully, but I can't not use drugs, well, I'm okay. Just a couple little problems there I have to live with. Now, here's the interesting part. I'll tell you what, before I get into this, I want to tell you a little story about me and give you an idea of what that looks like in my life. The last few years I was pretty much one of those guys that was all alone living on the streets or in somebody's attic or in an abandoned trailer house or whatever. But before that, I had a wife and a kid, you know, I'm sitting at home one night with my wife and we're on the couch and we're watching a movie and I just come in from a construction job and I was sober, right? I mean, I might have still had something in my system. But for the most part, I was sitting there sober with her. It's a good night. We're not fighting. I mean, that's a good night for us. And my daughter's there playing on the floor and we're watching a movie. It's about 9 o'clock at night and I've got this beautiful little daughter. She's maybe one or two at the time and she's just there playing, being happy. And it's great, right? All the bills are paid. Life is good, right? Right? Okay. She says, "Hey, I'm hungry. Will you go get us some tacos?" Now, we live in a small town, Hugo, Oklahoma, and Taco Mayo is just, everything's just right up the road. So I'm jumping in my truck, I'm going to Taco Mayo. Before I walk out the door, I lean over and I say, "Baby, I'll be back in 20 minutes. Well, you could have hooked a lie detector up to me and said, "Chad, you swear to God you'll be back in 20 minutes?" And I said, "Yes, absolutely, not a past." With flying colors. Okay. I go get the tacos, but on the way I'm thinking a little bit. Thinking, you know, tomorrow my wife will be at school. I can take my daughter to daycare, go hook up with one of my old buddies. You know, I've been on the road for a while. I'll go hook up with one of my old buddies, Michael. I'll go by his house. Maybe we'll do a little crank, a little meth, you know, and go have a little adventure. And of course, then I'll go home with my family and, you know, we'll do what we did last night. And everything's going to be good. Well, on the way back, after getting the tacos, I think, hey, I'm in the neighborhood. I'll just swing by his house for a minute. Well, so I pull over and I go knock on the door, you know, to let him know I'm coming over. I didn't have a cell phone at the time. You know, let him know I'm going to come by and see if he's got anything, you know. Well, sure enough, he does. He's home. He's got it. And, you know, just to show you how glamorous it was for me, he's got a piece of tinfoil and he's smoking meth off a piece of tinfoil. And he's like, "Man, this stuff is good. You got to try it." And I'm like, "Well, you know what? I'll try it, but I got to get home. We're watching a movie. I got tacos in the truck." Well, I try a little bit and a little bit more. And he's right. It's good. And a little bit more. Next thing I know, oh my God, it's midnight. I'm in so much trouble. Well, of course, the next thought is, I can't go home now. Well, my next, before I look up again and it's daylight. Well, now, and I got to tell you, it does not occur to me the pain I'm causing anybody in my life. It never occurs to me. The next thought I have is, I got to get my truck out of here or she's going to find me. And she'll be dragging my daughter along and I'll have to put up with all that crap. So we get out of there, right? My 20-minute trip to Taco Mayo takes 2 weeks. Now, that little story is, it's kind of like one of you, have you ever seen like a movie that's based on true events? You know, something that's... And the reason that that's what that is, I don't remember if that's exactly how it went that night. But I can tell you this, it went a lot like that over and over and over. That's how cool I am. I got a little girl sitting at home wondering, where is my dad? And I got her mom having to lie to her to say I'm off working. That's how cool I am. And I got to tell you, man, I wanted to be a dad for a long, long time before I got the opportunity. I'm all about being a dad. And I was then. But that physical and mental side of the disease of addiction doesn't allow me to be a father. I got no shot. I can't pull it off. No matter what is important in my life, there's nothing more important than me staying high. Nothing. That's the kind of guy I am without some God consciousness in my life. So, Now, I told you guys as I was walking out the door, I thought I'd be back in 20 minutes. And I thought I'd just run by Michael's and say hi. And I thought I'd just take one little hit and then I'd go home. I'm thinking all this stuff. Now, anybody that was watching me or knew me would say, Chad, that's not how it's going to go down. It's never how it goes down. And you know, it's funny. Why would I believe that? Because my experience shows over and over that it never works out that way. Why would I believe something like that? Why would I believe I've got any shot at controlling this? I don't believe in Santa Claus. I'm not crazy. I mean, I'm kind of crazy, but I'm not like crazy. I'm not, unless I'm high, I'm not hearing voices or anything like that. You know, I'm not. Why do I believe that? The way that I understand it today is, see, there's not just a physical and a mental side to this illness that I have. There's a spiritual part too. That's what we like to call it. The book calls it a spiritual malady. The best way I can describe it is I got something going on in here that just makes me not okay. And things have been okay until my drug use got really bad. Then things were, but for the most part of my life, things have been pretty okay. That's not everybody in here's experience. It's certainly not everybody in the rooms at AA or CA there. But my experience was everything was pretty okay. But in here, I'm not okay, and never was okay. See, the first time I drank, and I'm not going to spend much time on this story because it's a pretty boring one. It's just, you know, four guys and we were, you know, underage and one had a really bad fake ID and it worked. And we got a 12-pack and three was enough. We might have got two, 12, I don't know how it went. But anyway, whatever I had, I didn't get that drunk, but it was enough. It was enough. And those guys, we got in a little bit of trouble that night. We had some fun. Those guys had a good time. Let their inhibitions down a little bit. And we laughed and joked around and they had fun. I had fun too, but I had a lot more than that. I had a life-changing experience. It's like all of a sudden I wasn't this weak, inadequate, scared kid anymore that just wasn't enough. When I had a few beers in me, now I was one of you. It's like I was participating in God's world. It was a lot like a spiritual experience for me. You know, and looking back, I can see that I knew real well at that moment that I was going to do that a lot. A lot. And there could be consequences, and that was okay. I could deal with the consequences because it was worth it. You know? So the big news that I always have when I'm working with guys, and this may be big news for some of you, if you're an alcoholic, alcohol is not your problem. If you're a drug addict, drugs, not your problem. See, if you're an alcoholic, alcohol's your answer. Alcohol treats alcoholism. Drugs treat addiction. That's my answer. That's how I deal with being me. With the extreme selfishness that I live in every day, that's how I deal with it. Problem is, I don't have any control over it, and there's never enough. I don't know. I don't remember ever reaching a point saying, "Whew." Well, let me tell you this story real quick. I grew up in a family that drank, and it was good. It was fun. It's where the party was. I mean, there were some bad times when mom would, you know, get pretty mad at my stepdad because he would spend the anniversary in Dallas at Hard Rock Cafe or something, you know. I mean, there were some bad times, but I remember it being fun. I'm growing up and drinking's fun, and my mom taught me how to drink when I was in high school, and it was, she did a darn good job. That sounds bad, but let me explain how that went. See, my mom's not an alcoholic, and she, here's what she taught me. She said, "Son, drink a couple of beers. And when you start to feel it, stop. Have a Coke, a glass of tea, enjoy the party. And then a couple hours later, if you're kind of losing your buzz, have another beer." And that's how she did it. And she's been drinking successfully her whole life. She hardly ever does it, but when she does it, it's pretty successful. Okay, my problem was I never reached that point. I never once said, there it is. That's enough. I never said, oh, okay, I'm just right. Here, you can have the rest. I never got to that point. Didn't work for me. Okay, so anyway, that first drink for me is it's like a spiritual experience. It opens up the world for me. I can talk to girls. I'm not afraid of I can fight guys. Now, some of you guys in here, I know that you're relating to that. Because pretty much, if you're going to be a guy in high school and you're an insecure, scared little baby like me, it's real important that you be able to talk to girls and not be scared to fight. That's what makes you a man, after all. Right? Okay. That's what alcohol did for me. And then later on, drugs and, you know, seemed like a lot of spiritual experiences. So when you take away the alcohol or the drugs, we're not coming to you saying, hey, I see you have a problem. Here, let me have your problem. And you're saying, great, get this stuff out of my life. We're coming to you and we're taking your answer. We're taking the best thing you've ever found to treat just being you. How are you going to take that away? I got a good friend up in Canada that says the first step is not admitting I have a problem. The first step is admitting I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer anymore. The answer I had, the alcohol, the drugs, it ain't working no more. My answer doesn't work. I'm out of answers. What do you got? And that brings us to the solution. Because you see, if alcohol to me opens up the whole world and makes me okay with where I am and okay with you and every day is an adventure, what do you got to... What's going to get that back? Because see, if I'm going to give up the drugs and the drinking, I got to have that back. I can't live without that. So what I always like to ask, as I do some of you guys have been at the foundation meeting I do in PPG, in my home group, primary purpose group. What I always like to ask is this: how many AA meetings do you have to attend to get that back? How many AA meetings do you have to go to be okay with the world? I got to tell you, I went to one about every day for my first year without working the steps. That's not enough. That's not enough. What I found is that there's not enough meetings to attend. The only shot that I've got at getting that back and being okay is a spiritual awakening. And I got good news. That's exactly what the 12 steps have to offer. That's our solution. It's that simple. Why do I go to meetings? Well, for one thing, it's nice to be around other people to remind me what I'm trying to do here. But that's not why I go. I go to find people to carry the message to. I go to carry the message. I used to hear people say that and I thought, God, you're so arrogant. But see, that's not what it is. I need people to carry the message to. Because otherwise, I'm back to living in here and I'm not okay. Alright. So if alcohol's the answer, drugs are the answer, then what's the real problem? I've talked about not being okay in here, this spiritual malady. Man, and I'm sure you guys, you families can relate to this. I felt so bad for my mom when I started learning how hard it was to live with a guy like me and started seeing the damage I had done and how painful that had to be for her. As a matter of fact, she showed me a journal she had written when I was in treatment. She showed me this journal and it was like she wrote a lot. She's trying, you know, a lot. And she's writing, she's in Al-Anon now. Thank God for Al-Anon. It's great. But she, there were parts of it that she showed me and you couldn't read it at all. I was like, what is that? She goes, oh, that's when I was mad. This is when I was worried, and those are when I was mad. I was like, Mom, you can't read when you're mad. She goes, I know. It's probably a good thing. When I came home and told my mom, you know what? I found out that, and this is at about, I had about a year, and I got into the work. I told her, it turns out I suffer from what we call the Narcotics Anonymous. total self-centeredness. And she's like, really? Like, I didn't know that. Apparently, I'd been that way my whole life. And you know, it's hard for us to see it sometimes. I mean, the whole rest of the world can see it. I can see it in you guys. It's hard for me to see it in me. As a matter of fact, you know, my favorite analogy for this, going up to trying to get a drug addict or an alcoholic to see how selfish they are is like asking a fish, how's the water? And the fish says, what's water? See, it's all I know. It's all I know is how to take care of me. How to arrange things so that I'll be okay. And I'm nice to people when I do that. I'm trying to arrange everything just the way I need it. The best way to get you guys to act right is to be nice to you. I can't be selfish. I'm nice to people. I share. I say nice things. I do things for people. And 99% of the time, it's so that I can get what I want out of you. And you know, I'm so lame, a lot of times I just want you to like me. You know, it's funny, I found out I'm not near as cool as I thought I was through doing this work. I'm going to tell you guys a little story, and I feel like it's important to tell this story, and I hate telling it. I hate telling this story. But you know, it shows you who I really am, and I know there's some guys around here that can probably relate to this, but I spent my first year going to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting every day. And I lived with my girlfriend, and she was... And she was pregnant and with my child, and she never did get clean. She's, as far as I know, not clean today. I get a call from her every once a year or so, and there's no telling, you know, she just got out of jail or, you know, it's a bad situation. But we're going to have a baby, and we're giving this baby up for adoption. And we live in an apartment that's paid for by the adoption agency. And I'm clean. Right? And I really believe when I got out of treatment, I was like, cool, the drugs are off me. It's all good. I'm going to go to some meetings, be a cool place for me to hang out. I'll need something to do with my time. So I was going to a lot of meetings. As a matter of fact, my state of mind depended on making it to that meeting. And I'd hang on till I could get to the meeting. And of course, she would go with me because she's as sick as I am and jealous as she could be that there'd be somebody there hitting on me or something. So she's going with me. She's loaded the whole time. She liked to do speed too. And you know, in Narcotics Anonymous, they give you little key tags, like a desire chip. And I found one, I don't know, about a year ago going through some of my old stuff, one of hers, and she chewed, you know, to sit high in a meeting, she chewed that thing down to a pulp. You can't even tell it's a key tag, except it's got the little key ring hanging off of it. Poor thing. God. She's going to meetings with me, dragging her along. We're going to all these meetings. She's pregnant. We're living in an apartment paid for by the adoption. We have the baby. We give the baby up for adoption. I don't know, two or three weeks later, we're down to our last few weeks in that apartment. We're having a hard time. We're struggling. I mean, my God, she just gave her child up for adoption. Things are not good. And I've got about a year at the time, and I'm going to my sponsor, and he's asked me, I've got a sponsor, I'm talking to my sponsor, but I'm not working the steps because after all, I'm clean. I don't need to work the steps. I'm clean, right? You don't need to work the steps if you're not, I mean, if you're clean, I'm staying clean just fine. No problem. Haven't even come close to getting high. I'm a pretty good guy. Take the drugs off of me. Okay. I go to my sponsor and say, we're really having a hard time. We've been fighting a lot. And he says, look, I've been asking you to write this damn fourth step all this time. Look, just write the part on her. Answer the questions in the section on relationships on her. Bring that to me and then let's talk about it. Because he can't get me to see anything. It's all her fault as far as I'm concerned. Well, so I do that. I do that little piece. I come home from work. She's done a shot of crack. And she's read that stuff I wrote about. And it ain't good. It is not good. And she is furious. She's lost her mind. I can't get in the door. She leans out over the balcony, starts screaming at me. I don't even know what's wrong. She finally tells me. I get in the house. She finally lets me in. Huge fight. We fought. I'm a guy who doesn't hit girls. Well, until I got in that relationship. But I'm clean now. I definitely don't do it now. I'm clean. I'm a good guy, right? Never hit a girl. You don't ever hit girls. I did that, some of that stuff, but that's just because I was on drugs. I would never do... Yeah. Well, anyway, we get in this huge fight. I'm getting my clothes. I'm taking a knife away from her. I'm getting my clothes out of the closet. She grew up in a crazy environment. It was nothing to her to get in a fight. I mean, she was way tougher than me. And I'm throwing my clothes out on the bed because, by God, I'm right. She's wrong. She read my stuff. She's the one attacking me. It's not me. But I get my clothes because I'm right, right? I'm a painter. They have paint all over them. It's so important that I could replace them all for $20 at Goodwill, you know. But I'm getting my clothes, by God. So I'm getting, and then she gets quiet. That's not good. She shouldn't be quiet. I turn around. Now she is not saying, "Chad, I'm about to set your clothes on fire." She's just got the Zippo hood and very calmly dousing my clothes on our bed, dousing my clothes, and has a lighter in her hand. Well, this is the part where it gets ugly because I rear back and bam, I hit her hard. As a matter of fact, when I made amends to her a couple years later, she still couldn't hear very good out of this ear. You know, I guess I'd ruptured her eardrum or something, and she's not the type who'd go to the doctor and see about it, you know. Once again, that's how cool I am. Been clean a year. Off drugs for a year. I scoop up my clothes. I run out of there. I get in my car, drive across the street. Now, I know what to do. You call your sponsor, right? That's about how much I knew about recovery. Go to a meeting and call your sponsor. I call my sponsor. He's very loving. Nice guy. He's like, "You know, Chad, you just got a year. You know, it's all right. You can't expect yourself to be perfect," whatever. I have 3 or 4 conversations with him like that. And then I finally have a conversation with him and he says, "Why don't you try working the steps?" And it hit me. Oh, that's why we do this. And it's like my life started to flash before my eyes. Oh my God, I've been clean a year. I live in an apartment paid for by an adoption that, well, up until the day. Now I live at Mama's house. I just gave a kid up for adoption. I'm a terrible employee. If I'm late, I show up at noon. I remember going to work one time and I pulled up and they were just getting back from lunch and my boss goes, "My God, what time zone do you live in?" When people are late, they're 30 minutes late. You're 4 hours late again. And my thinking was, hell, I was on time yesterday. I deserve a little time, you know? I had a full ride to Oklahoma State in civil engineering. I made straight A's in high school and never took a book home. Well, it's in Hugo High School. I mean, you know, it's not like it was hard. Nobody took books home, but I was voted most likely to succeed. I was supposed to be successful, and I've been clean for a year, and look at me. And the important thing about that is I realized that all I ever think about is me. All I ever think about is me. It never occurs to me how Mom's doing. Never crosses my mind. I know that's wrong. I knew it was wrong to hit my girlfriend. I was taught that very clearly. As a matter of fact, I would have judged anyone real harshly for doing that. And you know what truth is? I'd probably still judge someone pretty harshly today, even though I've done the very same thing. The book says that we have moral and philosophical convictions galore. We just can't live up to them. See, what I understand today is that I'm selfish and self-centered. I'm driven. Think about what that means to be driven. That means I'm not making my decisions. My little car out there, man, that little Hyundai, it goes all over the place. It never decides where it's going to go, though. I decide. I drive it. When I am living on the basis of self-will, when I am not deeply involved in this work, when I'm not conscious of the presence of God in my life, I am driven by fear. I make my decisions because I'm scared of what's going to happen. I'm driven by self-delusion. I think if I can just arrange all this to get it just right, I'll be okay in here. I'm driven by self-seeking. Then I go out and do it. And I'm driven by self-pity because it's never enough. It's never enough. And those moral and philosophical convictions that I have, they mean nothing to me when I'm driven. They mean nothing. And I've got pretty good motives sometimes. I mean, it's like I'm trying to make this better for everybody, and I'm trying to... Of course, I really want to make it better for me first, but I mean, you know, for everybody else in the process, right? And that's what I'm all about. Making sure everything's okay for me. I spent 4 years in Narcotics Anonymous. I worked the steps there. My life really started to change. I really, after from that point, looking back, I don't know how happy Kim is about the damage to her ear and what happened in that situation. I don't know how happy other people are about the way that I was treating them. But I can tell you this, I'm grateful for some of that stuff that happened because it's driven me into doing this work. And it's kept me doing this work for 8 or 9 years now. I left Narcotics Anonymous and went to AA because my sponsor quit working a program. And there was no one else there in the NA fellowship I was going to ask to be my sponsor. My roommate had left NA about a year before and he had gone to AA, and I started talking to his sponsor, and his sponsor started talking to me about a pretty novel idea. He called it God. I was like, what? I really don't like to hear about that. But from him, it was okay hearing it. You know, I'll tell you one thing he said to me that was real interesting. I was sitting with him in Denny's. We didn't have good places to eat like Austin does. It's like Denny's. Was it? Denny's is awful. We're sitting at Denny's and he's eating his piece of carrot cake, you know, like he does every Sunday. And we're sitting there and he had been talking to me a lot about God. You know, I was kind of listening to him, okay. And he said something. He said, Chad, you know, you're a really smart guy. Well, you got my attention. Okay. You're right about that. And then he goes, you know, and that serves you well. I mean, I was in college at the time. He says, you know, it's good for you going to college. I was like, yeah. And I was still painting houses and I was tutoring kids. And he says, it darn sure serves you well in work. He said, it helps you be a good dad. And it also helps you carry the message. Then he goes, but there's one area where that does you absolutely no good. It's like, what? What? And he goes, when spiritual matters. See, you're never going to understand any of this stuff that's driving you so crazy about God. You're never going to understand any of that until you actually experience it. You know, so this guy got me into the big book through telling me things like that. And I realized that what I had been missing for that 4 years, we understood that selfishness was the problem. And then we tried to fix it. And this book is real clear, and my experience is real clear, that self can't fix selfishness. It doesn't work. I can try my hardest to be a good guy, and I don't pull it off. And I mean, I try, and I can't pull it off. But if I just stay in this work, then I get some freedom from it. And then I can actually be of service to other people. I want to talk about a couple of things. Before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about what I do today. And you know, I ended up in Austin, Texas. It's a pretty neat deal. My sponsor, you know, they're in Oklahoma. I've been in Austin for, say, almost 4 years. And I didn't want to come to Texas. I'm an Okie, right? I still kind of consider... No, that didn't mean anything to anybody in here, but I have a little pride about that. Of course, it might mean something if you're a basketball fan. Talk just went downhill. I was living in Oklahoma. I was living in Oklahoma City. My daughter's living with her mother and stepdad in Tulsa. Oklahoma City and Tulsa are about, I don't know, 80 miles apart. It takes me about an hour and a half to drive back and forth. And I'm getting her every other weekend. Right? I go pick her up, bring her back to Oklahoma City. We usually stay at mom's house because I'm living with a roommate, you know, and her grandparents. What a great kid she is. She's 13 today and just wonderful. But well, they decide, mom, stepdad, and my daughter, well, my daughter didn't, but mom and stepdad decide they're going to move to Austin, Texas. Now, I was like, all right, if that's what you guys are going to do, you know, I guess move. And they moved, and it wasn't working out as well as I thought it would. And I'd go from seeing my daughter every other weekend, and then, you know, maybe once in during that time period to go for a little school program or something like that, to see her about once every 2 months. And she's crying on the phone, and I'm struggling with it too. It was harder than I thought it would be. And I'm about to graduate from college. I think it's Christmas. I'm graduating in May, and I'm sitting there with my sponsor, Denny's. He's eating, I'm not. And he asked me what I'm going to do when I graduate. And I'm getting my degree in teaching. And I was like, well, I've been thinking about a few things. I may stay here and teach in Oklahoma City. You know, all my friends are here. The fellowship, it's here. Or I may move back down to Hugo, which is in the southeast corner of Oklahoma. And that's where all my family is. And I'm really close to my family. I may move back down there, you know. And he goes, sounds like you've been giving it a lot of thought. I said, yeah, I have. And he said, well, here's what I'd suggest you do. I want you to stop thinking about it and just pray about it. I was like, okay. Like, you know, okay, whatever, boss. And I did that. I can follow instruction. You know, even if I've learned somewhere along the way that it doesn't have to make sense for me to follow instruction. As a matter of fact, it seems to work better when it doesn't make sense to me. So I start praying about it. And that was around Christmas. And I swear to God, I don't remember making the decision to move to Austin. I don't know when that happened. I don't know what I don't know how that happened, but it happened. And I ended up sometime in the summer of 2008 with a degree in teaching, but no job in Austin, Texas. I took all my savings and put a 4-month lease down on an apartment. Because I couldn't get an apartment because I didn't have a job, but I had some student loan money saved up. And I spent that on a 4-month lease, and I'm set. I don't have a job, and the only adults that I know in Austin, Texas, are my ex-wife and her boyfriend. And I'm thinking, how did this happen? What an experience it's been, you know? Wow! I started going to some meetings. I couldn't find what I wanted. I was looking for some people that were really like into the work, you know, that were into the book, and I couldn't seem to find it. And then finally I was at a meeting and I said, okay, I was a little frustrated. I said, okay, where, and I hope this doesn't offend anybody. I've said this once. I said, where are the AA Nazis? Where are the people who are taking this way too seriously? And they're like, oh, you got to go to primary purpose group. And I went, and I didn't like it. It's huge. My home group is big. There's 150, 200 people there, and they're studying the book. Does that sound fun to anybody? They're studying the big book line by line, slowly. And we may cover a paragraph in one night. Wow. The fact that we're packing that many people in there to study the book is amazing. And about, I don't know, maybe a third, maybe a half of the people in there are getting bussed in from some kind of treatment center or something. And the energy in that place is really sick. But there's an energy level of people there wanting to get better. I just stand in there sometimes and I'm looking around thinking, wow, I get to be a part of this. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So I go to that meeting. I meet my sponsor today, Charlie, and I meet his wife, Katie, and they've kind of taken me in like family, and they've made, you know, they're such a big part. And I've really fallen in love with it down here. It's been great. I've got a job that I love. I'm a math teacher at an alternative high school. You know, best way I can describe it is when you hear in my classroom, you know, we're real strict on them. I mean, they go through a metal detector. I mean, they can, here's what they can bring with them. A library book and a key. That's it. That's all you get. If you bring money in, we put it straight in your lunch account. They have to wear the same little, you know, their little uniform. We search them. I pat them down. As a matter of fact, when I used to be a painter, I would walk into a room and I would look around, be looking for where it needed to be touched up. You know, I'm just in the habit, right? Now I'm in the habit of when I walk up to someone, I want to stick my hand in their shirt pocket and check for stuff. So we're pretty strict on these kids, right? Well, if you hear something vibrate in my classroom, it's not a cell phone. It's an ankle monitor that needs to be charged, you know. I work with a lot of kids in there that are, you know, on probation, that have been to jail. And it's funny. Sometimes I'll tell them, I'll sit in class and I'll say, and they'll be talking about all their court dates and all that stuff. And I'll say, you know, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but do you know that most people in this world have never been to jail? As a matter of fact, do you know that most people in this world don't know what a P.O. is? And they've sure never had one. It's a lot of fun. I get to do that. You know, I really have this great job. But I've got a relationship today with my daughter. Oh, wow. It's so good. You know, we could have never gotten that close living in Oklahoma, an hour and a half away from each other. And really, we couldn't live in the same town because her mother and I didn't get along. As a matter of fact, most of our conversations ended with a scream and a click. I mean, they were bad. I mean, we had big problems with each other. I moved down here. I made amends to her, but I think me moving made a big difference. Because she could finally see, hey, maybe Chad has someone else in mind than just himself. Maybe he's actually putting his daughter before himself. Now, if you guys remember from back a few minutes ago, I don't remember ever making the decision to move to Austin. That's not me that does that. I'm selfish and self-centered. But if I stay in this work, things just kind of happen sometimes. I'm like, how the hell did that happen? That's not me. We've got a relationship today, though. I see my daughter much more than every other weekend. And when I go pick her up, I go in the house and hang out with her mom and her stepdad. And, you know, we have donuts for Dad's Day at her elementary school. It's really cool because she's got me sitting on one side of her and her stepdad sitting on the other. You know, how cool is that? I mean, for a kid with divorced parents, she's got it as good as you can have it. You know, I mean, I can't fix the divorce, but she's got it as good as it can be. And her mom and I are good friends. As a matter of fact, I was working with Katie on some stuff, and I'd been going to church with... we were taking Abby to church, and me and her mom were sitting together in church, and Katie, my sponsor's wife, Katie said, Chad, you got to be careful, because even though you guys have been separated for 10 years... your daughter still might get the hope of you guys getting back together. And I thought, wow, that's our biggest problem today? I mean, we screamed at each other. We did not like each other. And today our biggest problem is we have to be careful that we're not too close to give my daughter the wrong idea. That's the power of God right there. I would have never known to ask for something like that. That's the kind of stuff that just happens through staying in this work. And it's not all me staying in the work. I don't mean for it to sound that way. She's done a lot of work too. That's why I love this program so much. So today, I try to work the best program I can. Because if I put my focus there, life falls into place around me in ways that I didn't know it would. And it's better than what I could have planned. Because I wouldn't have known that that's what I needed or wanted. What I think I want just causes me problems. What does that look like to work a solid program? Or what I like to think is a solid program? I stay current on inventory. I write inventory. I wrote inventory today. I'm not done with it. I got to write some more in the morning. I stay current on amends. I've got two or three amends left to make, and it's because I stole some stuff and I don't know where to go to pay it back. But I'm trying. I've tried. You know, if the opportunity comes up, I'll do it. I stay in what Mark used to call the disciplines, the strict disciplines of steps 10 and 11. I watch. I watch to see me getting out of that God-centeredness and back into self-will. And I discuss that with someone. I pray about it. I turn my thoughts. Make amends quickly if I've harmed somebody. At night, before I go to bed, I write out some inventory. You guys are doing that here, right? Don't stop doing that. Just because you go, oh, good, I don't have to do this crap anymore. I'm out of here. Don't stop. I pray, meditate in the mornings. I do that stuff throughout the day. But here's a big one. Man, I sponsor a lot of guys. I work with others. I don't worry so much about having time for that. God makes time for that. I sponsor about 15 guys right now, and I have time. It's okay. I got a busy schedule. Great. You know, it works out well. I carry the message. I think I just picked up two new ones. Bring it on. It's a gift every time. It's like God saying, Chad, you're going to need this. Here you go. Here's somebody for you to work with. And you know, sometimes that means I need something to get me out of here and out here working with you. Before I wrap this up, I want to talk a little bit about what we do in here. We seek God in this program. God could and would if He were sought. Right? We seek God. And I've got good news for you. I had a hard time understanding this. To me, that sounds like you got to go find God. When I came in here, I could care less about God. I didn't believe in God, not believe in God, whatever. I don't even care. I mean, if that works for you guys, great, go do it. I used to be a little jealous of people that were devoted, religious people. So I was thinking, I wish I was that dumb and that. Well, there. Of course, I'm homeless, you know. A guy like me can never have a spiritual experience, right? Never. Never. The way we seek God in this program, we don't have to go anywhere to find God. God's right here. All the time, has been, always will be. You cannot separate me from my Creator. I cannot be any closer to God than I am right now at this moment or when I was stealing from Grandma. I can't be any closer to God than I was at that moment. The big book is not trying to drive me closer to God. It's trying to give me some God consciousness, some awareness of that connection. See, my natural state is to be conscious of the presence of God in my life. My natural state is to be in tune with reality, the great reality. But the result of living on the basis of self-will is I got a lot of stuff in the way that's blocking me. All our work in this program is all about getting that stuff out of the way so that river of God consciousness can flow. Because that's my natural state. My little brother has a new baby. And I'm feeding his baby and that baby's looking in my eyes and I'm like, wow, that's God consciousness. There's nothing blocking this kid from God. Wish I could be like, I think that's what they mean when they say recovery. We're going way back, right? This work is all about the work I do on a daily basis. The amends I make, the inventory I write, the working with others, all that stuff is about getting rid of what's blocking me from that natural state of God consciousness. So the good news is, you don't have to know a thing about God to have a spiritual experience. You don't have to go out and find God and go to where. You just got to stay in this work. I didn't know that I was going to have a spiritual awakening. I came in here because I was doing a little too much crank. Spiritual awakening? You kidding me? That's not going to happen for a guy like me. It's happened. And it keeps happening as long as I stay in this work. That's worth more than anything in the world. There's nothing I can arrange out here that'll give me anything like that. I want to read something here and then I'm done. I like to read the book in first person. Kind of personalizes it for me. On page 25 in the big book it says, "The great fact is just this and nothing less. I have had a deep and effective spiritual experience which has revolutionized my whole attitude toward life, toward you, and toward God's universe. The central fact of my life today is the absolute certainty, that my Creator has entered into my heart and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for me which I could never do by myself." Thank you.